What's up, guys? I am nobody special, and it has been a historic day in the silver markets. I don't even know where to begin. Silver finally reached that $50 level. We talked about it on the morning live stream this morning. We blew right through it. We went up to as high as $51.38 today. We went deep into backwardation, just an absolute mayhem in silver markets. And then I blinked. I went and I did an interview on Melody Wright's channel. We were talking about the AI bubble and auto ABS and consumer credit, all kinds of other things. And by the time I came back, silver had sold off like $2.50. I've got Bob Coleman is with us today. He is the CEO of Idaho Armored Vaults, and he is the channel's gold and silver guy. We had scheduled to do this interview. We were going to do pre-recorded today. But you know what? After the day we had, I get the feeling people are going to have questions. And I wanted to give him a shot at asking you those questions, Bob. So let me start with the first one. And thank you for being here, of course. And we're going to throw away all like interviewer etiquette and, you know, best practices and everything. And I'm just going to ask you, what the hell happened in the silver market today?
Yeah, this is, you could say epic. I mean, you know, talking about, you know, backwardation going to $2.50, you know, where the futures market is $2.50 cheaper than the spot cash market, the borrowing rates, you know, like you were mentioning, the lease rates you were hearing were up to like 19%. Is that what you were saying with silver?
19%. It tripled at its highest point today to 19% to lease silver.
Yeah. Between that, you know, the accumulate or the issuance of shares or creation of shares not really dampening the borrowing rate and so forth. There's stress in the system. The volatility premiums on SLV options absolutely through the roof. I mean, this thing is just it's almost like picking up steam in a way. And at the same time, you got people calling tops. You got people are looking at this thing, you know, with cross eyes. I mean, you know, trying to figure out, is this it? Is it not it? Is it? You know, and you had this massive volatility move today in price where it has like a $3 candle, I guess, or $3 move. Or, I mean, on the daily chart, which is interesting, is it didn't close negative. So, you know, you didn't have an outside down day, which I think a lot of people who may have been short, maybe looking to hopefully have. So you haven't had that happen. But no, you saw the gold vol index, you know, that increased as well. You know, that show looked like it was breaking out. So you have the story is progressing. I mean, the question is, you know, you have the CME after hours here just announced margin increases effective for tomorrow, you know, to try and, you know, try and tighten up the spreads. The spreads are enormous right now. The wholesale market, this is going to blow your mind, but typically on the wholesale market, you have about a 10 cent spread between the bid and offer. Right now, it's about $1.35 between the bid and the offer. I mean, when you see industry players with that wide of a spread, they can't even, they have to protect themselves from the volatility. That's how much volatility is factored into the you know, the options market at this point.
Now, Bob, I really don't want you to stop, but I got to slow you down a little bit because what you just touched on there is wild. What you talked about with the spreads and $1.35 between the bid and the ask. All right. Typically when you see a big spread like that and the bid is, you know, hey, what I want or what I'm willing to pay for it. And the ask is what I'm willing to ask for it. When you see that widening, that's the sign of an illiquid market, right? That is a sign of a shortage, isn't it? We're looking at a shortage of metal here. Is that correct?
Well, it's a combination. When you have a wide spread like that, it could be obviously illiquidity, volatility, that type of thing. But it's also this backwardation. You have to remember the wholesale market. These guys, when they do a transaction, they're either adding a hedge or removing a hedge, depending on if they're buying or selling inventory. So if because of this backwardation, a lot of firms use the futures markets to hedge. So if someone's selling, they go into the market and sell. So they basically are hedging that product that they're bringing in. So when the backwardation is really wide like it is, they have absolutely no option but to widen spreads as well, because they have to match whatever the futures market separation between the spot market and the cash market and the futures market in the lead month contract. And so you have a lot of things going on. You know, another thing that was happening today, I picked up on it over the last week, is the December contract is seeing a kind of a liquidation of open interest. And you see some of that open interest floating into the October contract. And to me, this is something that I've been talking about, but open interest really isn't moving at all. It's shifting. And it's not like the market is just piling on and longs are getting on top of longs and everyone's riding the train higher. And this is not, the futures markets are not showing that at all. In fact, they're showing, I think what's happening is with this massive backwardation, you're going to start to see the banks use this as distribution. They could be unloading their inventory and they're getting ready to move a slew of it back to London or into other locations that are extremely tight right now.
Okay, there's 10 or 12 different things that you just touched on there that I want to elaborate on. We're going to have to go slow. First of all, backwardation. That's a big one. Guys, if you're new to this and you're not sure what that means, backwardation is when silver right now gets more expensive than silver in the future. Typically, the futures are more expensive than the commodity now. And then as time progresses and those contracts near maturity, the price ticks down, it decays away. When you have a shortage like we seem to be developing in London, the price right now, people are desperate to get it. Now they start overpaying for it and they go into backwardation. Again, it's a sign of a shortage. And today we went deep into backwardation. We went almost $3 deep in backwardation. I haven't been doing this as long as you, Bob. Have you ever seen it go that deep into backwardation before?
No. Even this is where it gets kind of interesting, because you're at interest rates are at 4% right now. So you should not see really much backwardation at all, if any, because of the high interest rate, the high cost of carry and time value of money, all that kind of stuff, especially when you're looking out into the future. Even in 2022, you saw backwardation develop in all four precious metals all at the same time going into the summer of 2022 and into September. But there you had interest rates coming off of zero, or very, very low level. So it was much easier to slip into backwardation. This is an issue where you're talking a massive vol event that is, I think, catching a lot of players off guard. Unlike very similar to the EFP when it exploded higher, and anybody who was hedged or short the market there, they took a lot of potential losses on mark to market positions on their hedges. Here, what you have now is the exact opposite, where if you're hedged, your hedge is doing actually a lot better than maybe the underlying position, the underlying inventory today, for example, because the futures market dropped like a rock. Now, on the other side of the equation, if you're long the futures market, whether you're speculating or using that as a trading vehicle, or maybe you were short cash and long the futures, maybe saying, hey, listen, the backwardation isn't going to stay very much because, interest rates are still high. And this thing's when it basically resolves itself, you're going to get, this click the other way. And maybe there's some arbitrage to make. Well, if you were short the cash and you were long the futures, you got obliterated today. And maybe that was possibly some of the stuff that got unwound as well. There's a lot of scenarios that could definitely come about from this. And, we all wish we were a fly on the wall of maybe Goldman Sachs' trading room, something like that. But you're trying to watch, all these indicators to try and get a sense of whether it's tightness, that's continually building, if it's a blow off move, if it's, what exactly is happening. And I think the industry right now is in sort of this state of sort of emergency situation where all of a sudden, these spreads are very wide. And the idea is, will the public start to, or maybe continue to flow money into this sector? Not necessarily, the retail metals markets picked up obviously since Labor Day, You know, it's the ETF flows that have been just enormous as well. And the question is, sometimes these things tend to feed on each other. And, you know, what happens is the system itself, the financial side of the intermediaries and so forth, will try to slow the train down by, you know, raising margins, or like, you know, maybe Robinhood, like they did, I think 2021, they stopped the allowing of buying SLV shares in the account. You know, there was things that had happened, which, you know, you typically don't see very often. But, you know, this is interesting. Like, for, you know, we were just talking, I think I just put out a post, one of the followers alerted me to it, where in, I think it was India, they just, one of the silver ETFs stopped taking inflows of money. They can't buy the silver. The premiums are too high. You know, these are, this kind of stuff, you're talking a very, very small market. It doesn't take, you know, a lot to, you know, a lot of capital flow to have a really big impact. And that's, and if the impact or the capital flow is very segmented and focused, it can have, you know, that much greater of an impact.
So, and that's wild, that story of the Indian ETF. Because they're publicly traded, right? They trade like a share. So people can keep buying it, can keep bidding it up. They're just not going to issue. So what's going to happen is, you know, the premium to the net asset value is going to go up, right? Yep. And they're just saying, we're not going to issue new shares and buy more silver, which means it's no longer really functioning like an ETF. It's just a meme stock at that point, isn't it? Or
yeah, it's one of the – it's one of the risks of, now if you're already in it and it goes to premium, you can take advantage of that and sell it. But if you're an unsuspecting investor that buys it at a fat premium, and not knowing that it is at a fat premium, and you have the spread risk, which is exactly what happened with PSLV back in its early days, you know, went to a tremendous premium to its net asset value. You want to be careful as an investor getting caught up into that type of excitement, because you're right. It, you know, the fund can go up in value, but it's now not one-to-one relationship.
Yeah. And you know, Sir Meme a lot here. I just caught this in the live chat while you were talking. Exactly right. You know, replying to Mr. Nostra Dumas, who said it's just a liquidity sink at that point. If the ETFs are not going to issue. So it's absorbing buying pressure without affecting the underlying metal price. Not really functioning there. Now, I'd like to expand on that, the ETF topic, because I'm in alignment with you. I do think that's playing a big role here. Now, you and I, in some of our past interviews, we've talked about the bifurcated silver market, about how for stackers, you know, guys who are trading in these guys, they've been a lot of selling going on lately. But what we've seen in the last couple of months has been retail, we'll say traders, investors like your Robinhood crowd, they have been piling into these ETFs. And now we've got guys like yesterday I talked on my live stream about Ray Dalio talking about how a 15% allocation to gold is reasonable. Jeff Gundlach, who is a bond market legend, was talking about how 25% allocation would not be unreasonable. Now, they were talking about gold. Not silver, but obviously silver is going to participate to a certain extent. Are you seeing this kind of retail trading enthusiasm on your end, maybe not in the physical space, but in the paper space? And what does that mean? Because, you know, if people start allocating portfolios at a percentage anywhere near that, that's a tidal wave of liquidity trying to squeeze into a very small precious metals market, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's like a gorilla trying to get into the birdcage instead of trying to get out. No, a lot of investors obviously have a lot of respect for those two gentlemen that you talked about, because they've had such a big track record. And yes, they're not necessarily your typical, gold bug, so to speak, or gold promoter, that type of thing. So to come in with that type of enthusiasm for the sector, either one, they see continued, you know, the story hasn't finished. You still have more melt up, more currency devaluation, more financial engineering, all that kind of stuff, which I think is what's going to happen. until the whole thing just gets to a melt up point that, you know, it's unsustainable. You know, going through 99, 2000, when I went through that market, this is somewhat similar. You know, watching AI, like you point out very, very well with some of these AI and channel stuffing and all that good stuff. There's a lot of that kind of stuff. I mean, you saw, you know, with, you can name the companies back then, JDS Uniphase and Lucent and all these other things that, you know, they talked about issuing revenue and credit, you know, basically with AR or accounts receivable instead of cash, but not to get off topic, but yeah, that is attracting a lot of inflow. And one thing about the silver market, which makes it kind of unique, is that it's very tiny, but when it does move, it moves like a hockey stick. And you have the gold silver ratio, you know, everybody's watching these charts. You know, they look at, you know, silver just hitting $50 and, you know, just now finally making a brand new all-time high. Anyone who is short this market is underwater. You know, well, of course, now that you've shorted, you know, the highs today, you're actually in decent, you know, you're plus right now. But in essence, the margin call that the CME is doing right now, the question is the structure of the market, is it the shorts that are in control or is it the longs that are in control? And my premise has always been the market is too short, and it's too short because the metal that's on the exchange is hedged metal. And a lot of those players are basically short the contract against physical metal. And the question now is, because now we're in backwardation, it doesn't pay money now to hold your metal in New York because it's too expensive. You're now, you know, you're selling a futures contract for what, $1.50 or whatever the backwardation is right now at the moment, under the actual physical price. You're actually losing money by selling that futures contract. So now the question is, you got to move that metal. And if there's an incentive to move that metal, you got to cover that short on the December contract. And you know, most likely you got to go into the October delivery month and short there, and then exercise your short to then deliver that metal and affect delivery, so to speak. If that metal's locked up on the exchange, you can't do it with December contracts. You have to wait till the delivery month if that's the case. And I think that's what I've been noticing happening as this open interest has been literally flat as a pancake while the market was just going straight up. It's the oddest thing out there. You don't have, you know, the typical type enthusiasm. So that, yeah, hopefully that gives listeners maybe a little bit of thought there.
So on the subject of the hedging and the metals across the pond, we saw something interesting. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago? We had the CEO of two of the most prominent gold mining companies in the world resigned on the same day. Barrick CEO and Newmont CEO resigned on the same day. And I couldn't help but think that's got to have something to do with hedging gone wrong. And, you know, we had spoken earlier this year about how the hedges were blowing up and they weren't functioning properly because of the big EFP premiums, the opposite of what we had today, right? Metal in London was worth a lot less than metal in New York. Today, we saw the opposite. So I want to imagine you're Bob Coleman, the mining CEO. What was going through your head today watching this? Are you worried about your trading desk and your hedges, or are you just saying, you know what, my price looks good, $50, I'm happy here?
Yeah, I mean, on the gold side, you didn't have the dislocation, I guess, that you had with silver. Silver is, so I don't know how the gold market functioned. I was watching silver all day today. So if you're on the silver side and you're hedged, this would be a great day to unwind potentially the hedge relative to your physical asset, because you got now it pays to actually unwind that hedge or buy back the short, because the short actually basically went down at an accelerated rate against the underlying physical. Now, of course, if you're trying to plan and say, listen, I don't know where the price is going to go, and I'm worried about a big pullback in the silver market, you maintain your hedge. I guess you could do that. But that's, you know, more of a trading, more of a trading strategy, I guess. But from a pure relative standpoint, yes, the futures markets, I don't know if they're going to get much cheaper relative to the cash market, unless you have another event tomorrow where all of a sudden the cash market just accelerates even more, or maybe you get a dislocation that's announced maybe in London tomorrow. Maybe a player who is desperate trying to find silver to deliver couldn't find it. And you have one of those first brand moments, I guess. but yeah, so there's a lot that can happen. And you're obviously walking into a weekend. You got this Section 232, I believe it is, the customs duties, supposed statement that's going to be, I guess, issued next week. I think it's, if all goes to plan, I guess, I don't know if they're even going to announce it because we're in a government shutdown. So maybe that gets delayed too.
And by the way, guys, Section 232, what Bob is referring to there, that is a investigation into whether tariffs are necessary for national security reasons, which is currently underway. Well, let's just go there then, Bob. Are tariffs playing a role in this backwardation? Worries of this 232 investigation and silver being added to the critical minerals list, which is what the 232 investigation is exploring. So could that have played a role in this just carnage in markets today?
Yeah, I mean, you could make a case just like banks made, what, $500 million in the first quarter of this year on the EFP, the blowout of the EFP, and them taking advantage of that arbitrage. You could almost say, well, maybe somebody knows something about what that ruling may be. And they're basically allowing, not expecting any type of tariff or any type of friction there. All of a sudden, there's no need to store that metal in New York anymore. And in order to get the best bang for your dollar, all of a sudden, the futures price just collapses. And the spot market stays high. As a bank, for example, if you're wanting to move that silver over to London, well, you just got paid a fortune to do it. I mean, if you go, even $1.50, for example, that's $1.50 arbitrage, risk-free, because you're working two sides of a trade. You can then move that metal back to London. And you, people have to understand, moving the metal coming out of the COMEX is similar to a fire engine pulling up to a house on fire and turning on the water and hosing, starting to apply water to the house that's on fire. The COMEX supply in New York can act as somewhat of a fire hose, putting the fire out, the stress or the tightness that's happening in London. So you have to be a little bit aware of how the dynamics of this, business kind of works.
Now, we just got a super chat from a moderator, Mish, here. Thank you, Mish, for supporting the channel. And this is kind of along the lines of that first brands moment that you referenced a few minutes back. He's saying, welcome to the Melon Patch, Bob. He's welcoming you to everybody who is in our live chat right now. By the way, hello, chat. Hello, everybody. It's good to see you guys. Thank you for joining this shotgun live stream here. Now, Mish is asking, how does a proof of collateral affect the market? And I think he's alluding to, maybe the double pledged collateral that we've seen going on with First Brands and with Tricolor. Could something like that be going on? What's your take on this?
I guess I have a little bit more faith, I guess, in the metals markets, because there's a lot of players watching, everybody. London market is maybe a little bit, is much more opaque than the COMEX. The COMEX is a very straightforward depository, gets audited. They report numbers on a daily basis. They report inflows, outflows. You have, accounting of futures contracts and, closing open interest at the end of the day. So, there's a lot more transparency there. London may be a little bit more different because it's more OTC oriented. So it's up to each player to sort of know what their positions are. And supposedly, like when you're dealing with, unlike the COMEX, where depository is audited on their entire holdings that represent the futures positions in the registered category, in London, it's actually up to each account holder to audit their own positions. So you don't have that overseer like the COMEX or the CME sort of, you know, their rules and regulations and so forth that they require from a reporting standard, not only of the depository but all the clearing members that are part of that exchange.
So, I mean, with the situation we had today and the volatility and the spreads blowing out, lease rates skyrocketing, is there, how do I say this? Let's do this. Do I need one of these to imagine the scenario where somebody in London doesn't have the metal they claim they have, and we end up in a situation like the nickel market a few years ago with that Chinese big shot who blew everything up and they started reversing trades at the LME?
Yeah, I mean, you obviously anything is possible. The interesting thing today, though, was the hedge side of the market collapsed. It dropped like a rock, you know, while the physical is actually rising. I mean, the LME scenario was, that's our version of sort of the COMEX in a way. So you kind of I don't say a different situation, but you have something that's, you know, you don't see very often. And so you have to look beyond just the COMEX itself, and you have to look at the outer line variables, kind of go outside the deviations and start looking at, you know, the broader markets. And the options market is one that has been a massive influence, I think, on SLV. And I think that's been the tail that's been wagging the dog, because as you've been seeing, you know, the price is rising, volatility premiums are going up at the same time, and they're going up very sharply. That's got to be squeezing the gamma, so to speak, and forcing dealers that are short calls, the retail public comes in and buys calls from the dealer who sells them the calls, and they go out, the dealer goes in and hedges that their short call with underlying position of that option. When that underlying position or that call is actually accelerating in value upward, and the volatility premium is actually accelerating even more, they have to go in and buy more underlying. Because if they start going out and buying call options, you know, that could affect basically create even more leverage to the upside. And that's just, you know, most call option or most options expire worthless. So that's typically how the dealer system sort of, it's all math to them. It's just that when you get into these outliers where all of a sudden you get this rush of money coming into one sector, you know, like GameStop, for example, you could see some damage inflicted very quickly. And then all of a sudden clearing firms start becoming in trouble. And so that's the question like we have here. We have this systemic issue right now with SLV and shares available to borrow and stock loan and all that kind of stuff going on. And there could be some pressure on unsuspecting financial parties that may not be your traditional commodity trading company. It could be an equity trading company that could be underwater. So there's a lot that can transpire here just by watching, you know, these volatility premiums and so forth.
So you've been posting this quite a bit here. You know, this is chartexchange.com showing the shares available to borrow for the SLV Trust, like you just mentioned, 12.31% interest you got to pay to borrow those shares, and still zero shares available even at this rate. And we've been watching this climb for a couple of weeks here. Is this the result, this shortage of shares available to borrow, is this a result of that gamma squeeze that you described, or is that something totally different playing out here?
That could be part of that situation where you also have players that were also using SLV from a hedging standpoint, using the short side of SLV an alternative to the futures contracts, for example. So there's a lot of, and you have to remember, SLV is a very popular index instrument for structured products. So you have the banks, which have created a lot of structured product. I think, from what I understand, about $1 trillion worth of structured products, or $1.5 trillion in the last couple of years. Not all of it, obviously, precious metals, but but a lot of it, SLV is a primary, GLD and SLV are primary indexing instruments for that because of the depth of, and the size of the ETF. And obviously they have an option structure that's very deep. So from an indexing standpoint, you could be having firms that were putting on collars or whatever, you know, whatever strategy that they're using, and potentially maybe some of those strategies were working against them because of the vol premium that they maybe weren't focused on or maybe not prepared for, or have to now hedge that, you know, the short side of that call, for example, is becoming, you know, maybe a little bit more painful to hold. And so that, you know, they're forced to actually, I mean, there's strategies like that that develop it, and it's not to get into the weeds of that because it's a very complex subject, but these are the types of things that people don't maybe understand when they look at, you know, the quote unquote manipulation of the market. There's a lot of players involved here that are doing multitude of strategies all at once.
So is my sarcasm detector out of Cal here? We got M&J. Thanks, M&J, for everything you do for the channel. And I guess she's quoting Flaisignon, saying, nobody, can I use collared leap to hedge my physical? Is my sarcasm detector not working here, or is he making sense here with a collar? What's a collared leap? Let's start with that.
I don't know.
I think he's making jokes about hedging his physical metal that he stacks in the options market here. I don't know how to say this. Mr. Flay, you do you, brother. Don't get too creative, though. When the accounting gets too creative, that's usually a sign of bad things to come. I got to do a little bit of channel maintenance real quick here, Bob. If you could bear with me, I want to say thank you very much to Captain Keebs, who gifted 10 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Thank you, Captain. I appreciate the support of the channel very much. Welcome to you, new Melonheads. Feel free and say thank you to Captain Keebs in the comments below. And just a reminder to you, Melonheads, that with that membership comes one free super chat a month. If you got questions for Bob, feel free to use that. And we will read and respond to your questions live on the air, provided my sarcasm detector is functional. And on that same token, welcome, Charlene. Thank you for supporting the channel, Charlene. And welcome to the Melonheads. Same goes to you. One free super chat every month. Feel free to use those and we will read and respond to your questions. So we talked earlier about margin requirements, and that's something we saw during the silver squeeze in 2021. They jacked up margin requirements to, if we're quoting Ralston Benham, who was then the CFTC chairman, to tamp down the enthusiasm in the market. And you're saying they just did that today. So that's news to me. Thank you for that. Maybe could you explain a little bit for some of the folks who are newer how increasing margin requirements can affect the price of the metal and how it can tamp down that enthusiasm, so to speak?
Well, you get to a point, depending on when you're dealing with margin, you're trying to ultimately, you're not trying to just kneecap the price of the commodity. You're trying to reduce the volatility as well, or should say you're trying to reduce the volatility first, because the clearing firms that are trading those markets are the ones that are taking that risk. Now, the clearing firms can increase margins, you know, on, outside of whatever the CME does. You know, they can tighten standards, that type of thing. But what you're trying to do is say, listen, the markets are getting more volatile. There's more risk that's being built into the system. There's, you know, if someone's buying on margin, say they're putting, you know, 20% down, and you know, all of a sudden, you know, you have a day like today where, you know, silver drops or moves 5% swings. It's very easy to get potentially stopped out of a position, or if you're leveraged enough, not only lose all your money, but then actually end up owing money. I mean, the silver market is notorious for very, very big swings. It's actually acted fairly calm, you know, during this entire run. Maybe April was probably one of those times where, yeah, you saw a big drop from 35 down to 28, or 34 and a half down to 28 or so, in a very quick period of time. But you know, in the past, you know, trading these markets in the past, you know, it was not unnormal to see a 20% move or a 15% move in the price of silver. You know, when it was, you know, back in the 2000s or 2010s, I mean, there was some, you could see some fairly large volatility. The question is, when they increase these margin requirements, who are they affecting more? Which side is actually weaker, I guess you could say. And so what's been happening as they've been raising margin requirements on gold, for example, it's had no effect. And I think they raised margin requirements on silver, I think in September, I believe. And obviously it had no effect. I think the market was just structurally too short. And so when you raise margin requirements, it also affects the short position. So the person that's short the market has to pony up more money. And obviously, as the market's been going up, the shorts are the ones that are actually feeling more of the pain. I mean, the long actually has, you know, more of a cushion, I guess you could say, to absorb that higher margin requirement. But you have to remember too, when you're dealing with the COMEX and futures trading, most people that trade those markets don't buy and hold. They're trading on leverage, and they're moving with the, if silver moves a dollar in a day, that's a huge move. Players will take advantage of that and, you know, get in and out, that type of thing.
And when they're changing margin requirements, that specifically only addresses the COMEX, right? Doesn't have any effect on the LBMA price. And I think today in particular, correct me if I'm wrong, most of the action was in London today. Is that fair to say, or this was not a COMEX thing?
Yeah, you can make the case. ETFs are primarily based in London. And one of the reasons is it's cheaper to store metal in London than it is in New York. And London is more of a cash market. And so it's more of a center of trading there. And the laws actually benefit the financial industry more than they do over here. So, but I won't get into the ETF stuff, but the stress of the system, the stress that we're seeing in the pricing is focused in London. You know, it is a spot market that's really, really tight right now. And obviously it shows, like you were mentioning, with lease rates as high as they are.
So I saw a tweet that you posted this morning, and I meant to ask you about this one earlier. And the timestamps are pretty important here. So I know you're not like a big follow the market minute to minute kind of guy. You usually recommend, you know, your buy and holds more your flavor. But I couldn't help but notice the timing here. 10:33 a.m. Eastern today. You write, precious metals pricing alert. Seeing wider bids and offers across the board in the industry. Volatility is rising sharply. Markets are in fast market. You got that quoted. And orders most likely being filled on a best efforts basis. And then you throw the caution flag out there. Please be careful trading in the precious metals markets, especially on leverage. 10:33 a.m. At 11:28 a.m., we had that sell-off really hit its stride and sold off almost $3 down to 48 and change. So, you know, it kind of seemed, my interpretation of this, or at least the feeling I got when I read this, was don't get too greedy here, guys. This could reverse any moment now. I'm not sure if that was the right take or not. And the terms, this is a fast market and being filled on a best effort basis. Could you maybe elaborate on a little bit of what you were talking about here in this tweet?
Yeah, and for those that, I've been in the markets since 1992, so back when they had Quotrons. But I started the career with Dean Witter and then Morgan Stanley. But back then you'd be trading, you know, call down to the floor and, you know, execute trades right from the floor. But you know, there are times where the markets start moving very, very quickly, very volatile. And they call that a fast market, where all of a sudden price action is very whippy, gapping in prices. So the fills, like for example, you put a market order in, you know, say a stock trading at $20, and you put a market order in and it fills at, you know, $19 because it's moving so fast. And when you talk about a best efforts basis, back then it was more of the trading pit and the trader actually trying to execute the trade for you. Nowadays it's, you know, much more computerized, but it's sort of my old way of saying, you know, when you're trying to put an order in, a market order in a fast market, you can get filled a much different price than what you're seeing on the screen just because prices were gapping. I mean, I was watching this thing, and like when you were saying silver started dropping $3, I mean, it just started dropping at 30 cent increments. I mean, you can get, you know, you have a stop order in. A lot of futures traders will trade with stops. You know, the stop doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get filled right where your stop is. It could hit that stop and then it becomes a market order. And that, you know, it, that next price is a massive gap lower. And that's sort of what a fast market is.
All right. Now, orders being filled on a best effort basis. You know, when I hear best effort basis, I'm thinking of the kid who just struck out in three pitches. I mean, that ball was never in any danger whatsoever. Good effort, Bobby. You know, everybody gets a trophy. That's not, that doesn't happen in silver markets. What does a best effort basis mean?
Best efforts is basically, it's an old term used in the, you know, the trading markets, and especially during the pit days, where you know, the trader is actively trying to make that trade or make that market for you. And it's just the market's moving so fast that, hey, I put the order in and it's not my fault that, you know, this thing just, you know, felt like a lead pipe in a vacuum tube. You know, yeah, sorry, but you know, that's the markets. And you see that type of disclosure a lot. So when you get into a fast market, a lot of times you'll use a limit order rather than a market order. You know, you may drop that limit down 30 or 40 cents, like in the silver markets, that just says, hey, listen, I know that the market's moving fast, but at least I'm going to try and guard myself against, you know, a massive gap down by just putting some type of limit order in so I don't just get, you know, a dollar under the market type of fill on a market order. Because I've seen that before. And I've seen where the markets are moving so fast that the exchange actually cancels trades because it got so disorderly on either a massive drop or a massive rise in a very quick period of time. That's happened before in my career too.
Now, I trim my position. I have some SLV calls and I trim my position a little bit yesterday, took some off the table. And I remember I put a limit order in. It was for like 25 cents above, you know, what the last trade was. And I was thinking, well, you know, it's heading up. So I'll just put a limit order in for a few cents above. No problem. It cleared almost instantly. I remember being shocked by that. And then, of course, the bid and ask went right back to where they were after my order cleared. Bank makes error in my favor. Collect $200. Okay, I was happy with that. Is that kind of like the same thing that you're talking about here, the fast market, how it just...
Yeah, I mean,
it fills miraculously because the spreads are opening up.
Yeah, I mean, in that instance, you could have had your order flow. That this is the thing about algorithms and all this high frequency trading, especially with, you know, the market makers nowadays. You know, they may have seen that order and they may have been in, you know, trying to get out, or they may have had a client trying to close out, you know, a call position. You're in there selling, they need to buy it back somehow. They're willing to take that price. Those are the types of dynamics. Unfortunately, you don't have the transparency in today's market that you used to have back in the 90s, for example, or the 80s when you had trading pits. I remember going to the Pecos in San Francisco, Pacific Stock Exchange, and they had the options market there. And you know, it was just madness. But you could get a sense of, you know, the participants there can kind of give you a sense of who's buying, who's selling. You know, you don't have that as much anymore, which is kind of, you know, it's all digital nowadays.
So look, there's a lot of people are out there calling a top right now, and we've been here twice before and it was the top then. So there's the, it's different this time side. And then there's the, you know, don't expect a different result on the third iteration of the same thing. What's your take here? I'm not going to hold you to this, but, you know, is there anything that strikes you as significantly different this time versus a 2011 or a 1980? Do you see the setup as different? Are we at risk of a top? Is there anything out there that makes you think we're at a top, or is this just going to keep going?
Yep. My sense has been, a little bit complicated, but my sense, if you look at 2011 and the move that it did in April 2011, that was more of a roll out of the May contract. And it was the sort of the illiquidity or the one-sided move that short players were trying to roll out of and then go into the next lead month contract. you know, 1980, I've heard a lot of stories about that. I've heard that there was a Chilean mining company that was hedged their production, getting absolutely bludgeoned and blown out. And they just happened to have a margin call of all margin calls and basically covered and forced the market, in a very, very quick fashion upward. And then it just, and of course, then the exchange came in and said, listen, you know, no more open orders to buy, only closed orders to sell. That's it. So, you know, they kind of forced that sort of peak. 2011, again, you had, I believe it was 6 margin hikes in the silver market that ultimately basically kind of made it extremely expensive for leverage players to stay long, I guess. And so that had that impact. Oddly enough, what you're seeing today is, I hate to say it's different this time, because whenever you say that, it never is. And you're probably talking a top. So whenever I see gold dealers say that, I'm like, oh my God, I cringe when I see this kind of stuff. The structure of the market is not the same as it was back then. And you're in a unique environment where on the fundamental story, we're all printing money. We were printing money back then. You know, we were zero interest rate policies, you know, political uncertainty, all that good stuff was still back then and it is today. So nothing has changed there. It's the positioning of the market, and the positioning market will always change. There's never two moments the same, never two tops that look the same. There's always, like the 2007, top was, this huge candle, the Fed just cut rates and just happened to mark the top. I think it was October of 2007. And then, of course, things didn't start rolling downhill till, obviously in, March of 2008 when we topped or when everything started to break apart. But you have different structures at different periods, and you're just trying to watch, the options market now have so much more impact than it had back in 2011 with the silver market top then. And with the futures markets, you don't have the open interest. You don't have the leverage that you had back then, meaning the amount of metal that's on the exchange it's like a 4-to-1 factor or 6-to-1 factor. It's not a 100-to-1, type of move or 100-to-1 factor where you have 1 ounce of physical gold representing 100 ounces of open interest paper contracts. You don't have that today. You have a much more deleveraged system. And so to balance these margin hikes, and if players aren't that involved with the futures markets, these margin hikes may not have as much of an effect as what it may have had in the past, if that makes sense. So now you have to look at other markets and how they're functioning. And the ETF market is much bigger than it was. There's more players involved in the ETF market. It's broader. It's global. The story is global. It's not U.S. centric. It's not, for example, in 2011, you had sort of a Western society. In 1980s high, it was about the U.S. It was a U.S. story with inflation and oil and all that. In 2011, it was the Western sort of governments and Western culture and society that you saw sort of this disenchantment with, because that's where a lot of the blow up of the great financial crisis kind of occurred. Today this is a global story. And so, the question you have to ask yourself is the global story done, or is the public going to say, let's pack up and, go home. I guess we had our run for the day, and, the silver market, had its blow off moment, and everybody go home now, ball game's over. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the story is still there. The question is, the silver diode battery that, people have talked about, I think it was Samsung that discussed this year and a half ago, aiding the electric vehicle market by, longer lasting, faster charging, more longevity of a battery. That's exactly what the electric vehicle market needs. And if the buying that's been coming in happens to be because of maybe these players are situating themselves, not for today, but maybe a year out from now, but they're accumulating enough silver to actually start manufacturing this type of product. You know, this isn't just a solar power or solar cell type of, or solar panel type of story anymore. It broadens, and in putting silver on the critical metals list, that wasn't around in 2011. In fact, it was never around. You know, silver's never been on the critical metals list. You know, platinum has. And so these are signs to watch for that says, you know, I think the U.S. government is concerned when they put an element onto that critical list.
And if I might take a stab myself at the it's different this time cliche, I mentioned on my live stream this morning, the gold to silver ratio during the Hunt brothers at its peak was, I think, around 13 to 15, somewhere in that ballpark. In 2011, the gold to silver ratio at the peak price was, I believe, 31.
Yes.
Today, we're sitting at 80.
Yep.
So silver relative to gold is still cheap here. Very cheap compared to previous highs.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Yes.
And the other thing is gold relative to the collective stupidity of man is still very cheap at this point, right? I mean, imagine if this scenario where you got guys like Gunlock and you got guys like Dalio, and then figure you got an army of 20-something CFAs that are out there who they're just automatons, right? They read off their call sheets and my idols are saying 15 to 20% allocation to gold, so I better do that. And if we really do get a parade of money managers start putting their clients into gold at something more than the 0 to 5% it's historically been, if we actually go into double-digit percentages here, that's a massive amount of money piling into gold at a time when silver is already undervalued relative to gold. I don't think we had any setup resembling that during the market volatility of 2011 or with the Hunt brothers, not even close. So there are plenty of reasons why it's different this time. Plenty.
Well, and if you're trying to, if you put the tinfoil hat on, so to speak.
Can do.
Yeah. The banks traditionally will mark up inventory at, you know, it's the old adage, putting lipstick on the pig. They will mark up inventory to sell that inventory at the highest price they can get. And that's one of the reasons why the public says, God, I always buy high and I sell low. I wonder why. Well, you have to remember, the banks were the biggest buyers of metals earlier this year. They got a lot of inventory sitting on the COMEX that they're looking to move. As these players like Gunlock come in and say, listen, 25% allocation, this and that, and you start to see you know, the traditional advisors, they go, well, maybe he's makes some sense and the metals are going up. I look like an idiot because I've told my client gold's only for, you know, the conspiracy crowd and the guys that wear tinfoil hats. No.
Looking fashionable guys. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, exactly. with great hairlines, of course. But the issue, I think, is you have this sort of recognition that I've been wrong as an advisor. And so, you know, that you start to see that piling in effect. And I think that's what you started to see after the summer, going into Labor Day, markets breaking out. It started getting to one-way action. Asia was buying. You had Diwali, which is the festival season in India, which was, you know, obviously you had that kicking in. You had a lot of capital flows going into ETFs. There's a lot that started to happen at a time when the U.S. Mint went into a two-week audit in September and just shut down the facility, which is typical. You know, you close down the facility, you do a full audit, and then you go back in production. But during that two-week time, you're not taking orders. And all of a sudden, you wholesalers didn't have the inventory like they typically had, the typical flow. So they start running out of product. And obviously, people start buying whatever else is cheap. You know, the maple leaves start going up, the you know, all the other stuff starts to rise. You had this happen at a time when over the summer, everybody and their mother was selling, no one was buying, everybody was sitting on inventory thinking, my God, I can't take anymore. And so this kind of rush, I think, kind of set the industry, you know, kind of washed out a lot of excess inventory. But I think it got sort of, you know, the moment people can't have something, that's when they want it the most. And I think we kind of hit this sort of scenario where you got almost like an enthusiasm that just came out of nowhere. And, you know, and the options market tends to have more of an impact on the ETFs. And so you have, you know, people are buying, you know, throwing money into these ETFs and, you know, and then they're throwing money into options and, you know, the whole market's just getting lopsided on one side of the deck. The question is, and, you know, mining stocks, they've had a huge run as well. They were very overbought. You know, you have people that are maybe getting out of mining stocks now, throwing that money into the physical metal that may be saying, hey, listen, I'm taking chips off the table. You don't know how all this is ultimately going to play out. So you don't want to make these guesses like, oh God, we hit the top and that's it.
I can tell you, I have spoken to a number of people over the last few days, and at least two of them have mentioned what you just described, profits from miners rolling into physical. Two different people in the last couple of days have told me about that. So that's, it's funny you should mention that. Now, on the physical market, you sell metal. Are you noticing the buyers starting to come back? I'm starting to see rumors that premiums ticking up ever so slightly from very historic lows. But I am starting to see anecdata and some numbers of maybe a little bit more retail participation in the physical market. Are you seeing that also?
Yeah, the wholesale level, you like, for example, Silver Eagles jumped probably $2 in premium over the last probably 4 weeks or so. You know, of course, you're going to get me started on this, but
just bought a two for 250 over spot. Feels like a win.
Yeah. I mean, the retail dealer is back to, you know, I'm seeing $8, $9, $10 over spot for Silver Eagles. I preface just as from the public standpoint, shop around, you know, don't trust the dealer that you've always been going to is going to give you the best price. Just shop around, you know, take your time before, you know, buying something, because like we just saw, when everybody starts selling, those spreads will widen and the bids collapse. And all of a sudden you bought something for $8 over spot and now they're going to buy it back from you at 50 cents under spot. That's, you know, $8.50 you got to make back in the spot price. That's a very difficult thing to overcome. So you just try to buy, you know, a good solid product that you like, but shop around and try and get the lowest premium possible. Unfortunately, the industry is not regulated and they will do their best to make as much money off you as possible. And it's, you know, I'm all for the dealers making a profit. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that from the consumer standpoint, they have to also have an investment that they can make money in as well. And this is part of what has hurt this industry over the last couple of years is these massive spreads where these dealers that were charging $20 over spot for Eagles, $12 over spot for Maples, or $10 over spot for Maples, and $6 and $8 over spot for Silver Rounds. And they're all the big online guys. They were all doing it. And then all of a sudden they go to $4, $3 under spot when you want to sell those rounds back. It was just, it leaves a bad taste in the consumer's mouth. And I think that's what drove a lot of money back into ETFs, because people realized, you know, these physical products, they may have a lot of upside and a lot of potential pros to them, but I can't get over the spreads just to make any money in this stuff. And that's the unfortunate thing about it, that I wish the industry would be more sensitive to.
And, you know, speaking of shopping around, one guy who never got in on that overt over the top hype game and the blowout premiums was Bob Coleman. And let me just preface this by saying this is not a paid advertisement at all. Bob is just here helping us out and sharing his knowledge with us, but he is a metal dealer. And so I'd be remiss if I didn't mention IdahoArmoredVaults.com, where is another place you should be shopping around. Now, Bob posts his prices right there, and I think you'll find they are comparable or better than just about every other dealer that you will look at online. At least I've noticed that when I have been shopping around your website in the past, Bob. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I come at the market and the industry from a complete opposite perspective. You know, being a registered investment advisor, you know, I've been doing this since 92 as an investment advisor and so forth, managing money as a hedge fund manager, you know, running a depository. My goal is to provide that advisory type relationship to the customer that says, listen, your interests are what's most paramount. My interests are not. And the idea is I don't come at this as a broker, so to speak, with a commission and a conflict of interest, I come at it with, hey, listen, I can get this product at this price. It'll save you a lot of money. It beats everybody else in the industry, but at least it keeps more money in your pocket. And I think, you know, I think that's what at least my premise is. Unfortunately, we tend not to see that very much. Sorry, get a drink here.
By the way, that I messed up the URL. That is goldsilvervault.com, which is the Idaho Armored Vault's website. I gave people the wrong address. So while you're clearing your throat, let me clear my mistake. Goldsilvervault.com.
Yeah, and so when we look at again the clients that we have, they're it's not just simply a storage relationship or a precious metal purchaser or dealer type relationship. It's, you know, I look at the markets, I get people perspective, just like we do here. You know, I do this every day on Twitter at no cost, you know, on my own time. It takes a lot of energy and time to do some of this research to help the community, to help others understand the markets, rather than getting caught up in the manipulation mantra and the rabbit holes that, you know, a lot of these social media types of promoters and podcasters and things like that love to go down in the clickbait and that type of stuff. I hate that. I think that's most of that stuff is a complete waste of time, and it's there to try to agitate and get people, you know, give people anxiety to you know, buy metals or to buy a subscription. And it doesn't, to me, it just adds to one's stress level. It doesn't take it away. And I think that's important. That's why I love watching your program and what you do, because you're educating people. I mean, you're not trying to say, listen, the government's going to fail tomorrow. And, you know, even though, you know, a lot of the audience may feel that way, but you just try to provide perspective on any topic you're doing, which I think is great. I mean, that we need to be more, I guess, doing that more often.
Now, I have one more question. I know we're running over a little bit here, and thank you for your time, Bob. I'm not trying to use up too much of it. I have one hypothetical I have to throw at you, because I think it's something that's looming out there that metals traders, investors should see coming. This 232 investigation, we're expecting a result. I'm hearing next week as soon we may get a result of this 232 investigation and whether or not tariffs apply to silver. Give me your best, because you run a trading desk and everything. Give me your best estimate of what happens. It's a Boolean response, right? If silver tariffs this, if no silver tariffs that, what is that going to look like if we get that?
Well, my God, if they actually did place tariffs on silver, it would be like watching a wrecking ball hitting the COMEX. You would see this massive backwardation whip back into a exchange, you know, a massive exchange for physical spread contango literally overnight. And you know, that would be pretty wild to watch, actually. And the meaning, the reasoning behind that is, if you're short futures contracts and you actually have to pony up silver, now all of a sudden you have to make the decision, any silver that you don't have in the COMEX that you have outside the country that may be waiting to come in now has an added cost of whatever that tariff may be. So if it's a 20% tariff on $1 million trade, now you have to come up with $200,000 just to get the metal into the country. Yeah, you know, that's something you cannot hedge. Now, you know, the other side of me says, well, the banks and, or I'm sorry, the backwardation was so big today, somebody must have knew something, or somebody just got absolutely bludgeoned. It's kind of like the moment when oil went negative, if you think about it that way, the backwardation, the spread between, you know, the futures markets and the spot market went so negative today, it's, you don't see that very often. So you can make the case that, okay, the tariffs wouldn't be put in place. This will allow metal to start flowing freely again, you know, and going to places in the world where it's most needed, because money travels where it's best treated. You know, let's just be honest. And so going back to London would start to put that fire out, start to reduce the lease costs and the tightness, and it'll start to equalize the market. You know, that actually wouldn't be a bad thing. You wouldn't, you know, you're not driving, you know, with, you know, on a rail car on a track with only two wheels on one side of the track that are connected to the track. You know, it's going to be more streamlined and less volatile. But I don't, you know, the world we live in, I mean, that may just be a sideline show to potentially, you know, something else happening somewhere else in the world.
Would you say the market right now is positioned more towards there being no tariffs on silver, or are we more in a position where the market is expecting those silver tariffs?
I think at this point, where the pricing is on the futures markets, they're expecting no tariffs. They're expecting that money to get loosened up, or the silver to get loosened up, and to start flowing like a river. And I would start, I would think that you're going to start seeing millions of ounces starting to leave the COMEX depositories. Now that the backwardation pays them to move that metal someplace else.
So that's your Max Payne trade then. If they come out and they say tariffs on silver next week or 2 weeks from now, that's your Max Payne scenario, because the market would be offsides then.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Bob, I know we ran long here. I'm really grateful. Thank you for helping us make heads or tails of what we saw in the market today. I really appreciate that. Once again, folks, that's Bob Coleman. He is the CEO of Idaho Armored Vaults and at Profits Plus ID on Twitter, which you really need to be following. He has been money in the bank the last 2 years here. Real quick, before we sign off, thank you so much, Captain Keebs, for the second time today, for donating 10 Nobody Special Finance memberships, otherwise known as planting seeds in the melon patch. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Welcome to you, new melon heads. Be sure to thank Captain Keebs for his generosity. And Mr. Carter, thank you, Mark, for supporting the channel and becoming a channel member. Welcome to you as well, sir. My tinfoil hat's off to you. Thank you once again for supporting the channel. Thanks again, Bob. I really appreciate that. Check out Bob's Twitter feed, guys. Check out his website. One of the best in the business. And thank you guys for joining us late at night for this shotgun live stream. It's been a hell of a day. It's going to go down in the history books. Who knows what tomorrow holds, but I'll see you tomorrow morning for that one. Thanks again, Bob. Everybody else, until next time, live small and dream big.